Should we call off Easter this year? Some are claiming that an ancient stone tablet casts doubt on the resurrection of Jesus. Any truth to this? Welcome to Reasonable Faith, Conversations with William Lane Craig. I'm Kevin Harris, and we hope you'll find the topics we discuss enriching and enlightening concerning the big questions of life. Dr. William Lane Craig is a noted philosopher and theologian known for his work on the existence of God, philosophy of time, and the resurrection of Jesus. And we invite you to discover the wealth of resources at reasonablefaith.org. There you'll find Dr. Craig's famous debates with leading atheists, articles, books, podcasts, audio from Dr. Craig's Defenders class, and a question and answer section featuring amazing questions people send us and answers from Dr. Craig. That's reasonablefaith.org. reasonablefaith.org. It's a 3-foot-tall tablet with 87 lines of Hebrew that scholars think date from the decades just before the birth of Jesus. And it's causing quite a stir, Dr. Craig, in biblical archaeological circles especially, because some claim that it speaks of a Messiah who will rise from the dead after 3 days. Now, some could say, oh, it's a prophecy of Jesus, but the more skeptical interpretation is that motif of a Messiah rising 3 days after 3 days was actually before Jesus, and so that cast doubt on the authenticity of the resurrection. Are you pretty familiar with this stone found about 10 years ago?
Well, I've read about it recently in the newspapers, as you have, and then have followed it with some interest. The claim here by one maverick professor, Israel Knoll, is that the stone's inscription, or it's not an inscription, it's in ink, but that the stone's text is evidence of the idea of a Messiah who would be killed and would then rise again from the dead after 3 days, and that this was in Jewish thinking prior to the time of Christ, so that this isn't something that was original with Christianity. This was something that was already within Judaism in its messianic expectations. That's his claim.
This would, if true, dispel one of your evidences for the resurrection, and that is that there was no expectation of a resurrection prior to the end of the world, prior to the eschaton. And so this would say, if this guy is right, would say, oh, yes, there was. There was this expectation of a Messiah. And then the writers around Jesus just copied it.
Yes, or but perhaps Jesus himself was aware of this prophetic strain within Judaism and applied it to himself. We mustn't exclude that possibility either. So that the discovery, if it were valid, would have both pluses and minuses as far as apologetics is concerned. On the minus column, it would, as you say, undercut one of the supports for the historicity of the resurrection, namely that the disciples came to believe sincerely and suddenly that God had raised Jesus from the dead, despite every predisposition to the contrary. This argument is the centerpiece, for example, of N.T. Wright's case for the resurrection of Jesus in his massive book, The Resurrection of the Son of God. What Wright shows in that book is that there is absolutely no expectation anywhere in antecedent Judaism of the idea of a Messiah who, instead of conquering the enemies of Israel and restoring David's throne in Jerusalem, would be humiliatingly executed by them as a criminal, much less then that Messiah would somehow rise from the dead as an isolated event within history apart from the resurrection at the end of the world. And Wright's case is completely documented. There is no trace anywhere in antecedent Judaism of that sort of an understanding of Messiah. Everything we know about Messiah is that Messiah would conquer Israel's enemies and restore the kingdom of God, restore the kingdom of David to Israel. So this argument, if this stone were correct, would undercut that by showing that this wasn't unprecedented within Judaism, that in fact there was a messianic strain of belief that thought Messiah would be killed and raised from the dead after 3 days. Now, that would be the negative side. The plus side would be that the prophecies that Jesus gave of his own death and resurrection have often been dismissed by critical scholars as written in after the event, after the crucifixion, and after the early church came to believe Jesus was risen from the dead. They put back on his lips these prophecies of his own death and resurrection to make it look as though Jesus had anticipated and prophesied that he would be killed and raised from the dead. Well, if Professor Knoll is correct, and this was a feature within antecedent Judaism, then there's no reason Jesus couldn't have given such prophecies. He might well have been aware of this Jewish messianic expectation and picked it up and applied it to himself and made these prophecies. So what the discovery would take away with the right hand, it would give back with the left. It would have both positive and negative consequences if, in fact, this inscription were to read and have this, as Professor Knoll thinks, and were to have the significance that he thinks it has.
The big fly in the ointment here is that we've just got a lot of pieces missing off this tablet, and the script is incomplete in some areas. It's very, very old.
When you read it, Kevin, I mean, it is nothing but a series of sentence fragments. It is, some of the lines are just one or two or three words long. It is just utterly unintelligible series of sentence fragments. And so that's part of the problem. And the lines that Professor Knoll thinks have this deep significance are themselves disputed in their reading. Scholars haven't come to agree that his reading of them is correct. And even if you were to grant that his reading of them were correct, it's far from clear that it would have the significance that Professor Knoll thinks that it would. You see, Professor Knoll wrote a book some years ago that moved no scholarly dirt whatsoever, in the sense that it made no impact, in which he claimed that prior to the time of Christ, there was this strain of messianic expectation in Judaism, and no one paid any attention to it because, as people like N.T. Wright have shown, this is just completely un-Jewish. There isn't such a thing. And so when he saw this inscription, he has a very vested interest in reading this into the text because he wants to validate his theory that he had already arrived at previously. And so I think he's very eager to find his theory confirmed by this text and is anxious to read into it something that most people don't see.
Seems like he just really latched onto and jumped on a line in there that mentions 3 days.
Yes, line 80 of the text says, in 3 days, and then there's a fragment missing, the words are obscured, I, Gabriel, and then again the rest is fragmentary and you can't tell what it reads. In 3 days, blank, I, Gabriel, blank. Now, that hardly seems to be a messianic prophecy that the Messiah would be killed and after 3 days rise. But Professor Knoll says that he thinks that the reading should be, in 3 days, I, Gabriel, command you to live. That This is, and he thinks that Gabriel is speaking this to the Messiah, and that therefore that's the way he interprets it.
Well, it's highly speculative that that's even what it's saying.
Well, I think so, and especially when you realize that this text reflects other Old Testament prophets like Daniel. It reflects the prophecies that are already in the Old Testament that are colored here. And you find throughout this whole text the 3-day motif repeated over and over again. In line 19, it mentions in 3 days. In line 54, it says 3 days. In line 65, it speaks of 3 saints of the world. In line 70, I have sent 3 prophets to my people. Line 75 speaks of 3 shepherds. In line 79, it says 3 signs. And then line 80, in 3 days.
Sounds like more of a proof text for the Trinity than anything else.
Well, yeah. You could almost read it that way. The 3-day motif was very common in in Judaism, where numbers had symbolic value. And
yeah,
in particular,
the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, too, it seems that there are plenty of verses that mention 3 days.
In the 3 days, right, exactly. In fact, I think that line 80 here in his reading is strikingly reminiscent of Hosea 6:2, which says that in 2 days he will heal us. On the third day, he will raise us up, and we will live in his presence. Now, that sounds very much like what line 80 here in this text is reflecting on, is Hosea 6:2.
And the author of this text would be someone familiar with
Hosea. With Hosea, just as he was familiar with Daniel and the other prophets. Now, what needs to be emphasized is that text in Hosea, on the third day, he will raise us up and we will live in his presence, has nothing to do with Messiah and has nothing to do with resurrection from the dead. What it's talking about is that God will restore the national fortunes of Israel, that Israel will be healed and restored as a nation. And the three-day motif is very common in Judaism as meaning a short period of time. So I think that it's far more plausible in light of the evidence that what line 80 is talking about is a reflection on Hosea 6:2, assuming Professor Knoll's reading of the text is correct, and has no connection whatsoever with resurrection from the dead or with Messiah.
I'm glad we're doing this podcast, Bill, because already the internet and all the blogosphere lit up immediately with, oh, this could be what the atheists have been hoping for.
Sensationalism just loves this stuff. I might want to comment too, Kevin, on line 81, where it refers to the prince of princes. And again, Knoll says, this is a reference to the Messiah. You see, this is where he gets the idea of the Messiah, the prince of princes. Well, the problem with that is this expression, the prince of princes, is again lifted out of the book of Daniel. That's where this expression is found. And what does it refer to there? Well, in Daniel, the princes are angels. They are angelic beings. So when Michael comes to Daniel, he says, I have to do battle with the prince of Persia, and the prince of Greece has detained me. And they're talking about angels and angelic beings that are associated with these different countries. These are the princes. And who is the prince of princes in Daniel? Well, it's God. God himself is the prince of the angelic princes that guide the destiny of nations. So it's not a reference to Messiah at all. It's a title for God, for Yahweh, the Lord. So again, I think Knoll is just completely off base in reading this in terms of Messiah or in terms of resurrection from the dead. I think, to be quite honest, that his reading here is fanciful, and that this text is of no relevance whatsoever to Jewish messianic expectations or to the belief in resurrection from the dead.
Well, he certainly is being pretty straightforward or assertive about that, saying, quote, this should shake our basic view of Christianity. He said, resurrection after 3 days becomes a motif developed before Jesus, which runs contrary to nearly all scholarship.
He admits that. That needs to be taken soberly. Why does it run contrary to all scholarship? Because, as people like N.T. Wright have demonstrated, without exception, Jewish messianic expectations were that Messiah would be triumphant, and there is absolutely no idea that Messiah is going to be defeated by his enemies and conquered, much less than rise from the dead. So Knoll is at least being honest there in representing his view as a lonely voice contrary to scholarship.
Well, here's the bottom line, Bill, as we conclude today. Do we need to cancel Easter services this year or not?
I don't think so. I think we can celebrate Easter with confidence again this year.
Thank you, Dr. Craig, for spending some time with us, and thank you, the listener, for being here today. This podcast is available at reasonablefaith.org, as well as a wealth of audio, video, and written materials from William Lane Craig. People all over the world have benefited from the insights of Dr. Craig, and we invite you to browse our resources at reasonablefaith.org. reasonablefaith.org. And when you give to Reasonable Faith or purchase our resources, you help us expand into more media and speaking events, taking Christ to a world of big questions. So be sure and visit us at reasonablefaith.org. I'm Kevin Harris. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Reasonable Faith with William Lane Craig.